This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bright and early, good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel in studio, along with my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, leading into the Winnipeg Jets and the Ottawa Senators puck drop at that game, 2 p.m., a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Joining us on the show this morning in about 1 hour's time will be from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. He's their beat writer for the team website, Anthony Sanfilippo, our all-time number one guest on this program. At 9:30 this morning, Michael Russo from the Minneapolis Star Tribune will join us to talk about the Minnesota Wild and their playoff push and everything that they did at the trade deadline that just passed this previous Wednesday. And then at 10 a.m. this morning, from the Ottawa Citizen to preview today's Jets-Sens game, James Gordon, good friend of the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our Facebook is facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, sort of a disparity in the clothing right now, I would say. We have Richard looking dapper and ready for the game, wearing a cardigan. Is that a sweater or a cardigan, Richard?
It's a cardigan.
A cardigan, sort of stealing my look, but I'll let it slide.
Well, if I'm stealing your look, I'm just going to go take and burn it right now.
fair enough. I can accept that. So Richard, suit and tie, cardigan, looking sharp. Is he wearing his hoodie? We're off to a good start already this Saturday morning, gentlemen.
Well, I mean, Richie's always better dressed than I am anyways, so there's a little feedback here.
There we go.
My plan is to go home and change after, so.
That's good.
After a rough WWE last night.
Yeah, how was the steel cage match between you and Remus?
That was a really fun night last night. I went with Huss and Remus, and it was incredible. Really good matches. There was a really good crowd there. It was a lot of fun, and it's road to WrestleMania. WrestleMania is only a month away, and Daniel Bryant stole the show there. Yeah, it was a good time.
Did you chant yes?
Yeah, we did. We got into it. It was lots of fun.
What's chant yes mean?
His thing is for...
Oh, so for a guy who's been ripping right before we got on air, is he the guy who's ripping WWE? Drew knows all the sayings.
I admit that I knew it. I didn't go, but I admit that I knew that everybody for Daniel Bryan points their fingers in the air and chants yes.
Yeah, no, it's he has become one of the most popular guys in WWE, for sure. All of the t-shirts and everything. He is... Some of the other guys weren't there, John Cena and... You know, all those guys, but yeah, Daniel Bryan is definitely one of the most popular guys, and everybody was chanting yes.
Richard likes to pretend he's too highbrow for this sort of thing, right, Richie?
No, I mean, you know, wrestling is fun. As he invites me to the annual WrestleMania party.
Yeah, wrestling's awesome. I mean, if it's not everybody's thing, but, you know, we like it, and Remus, Huss, and I got into it. It was good.
There you go. Glad to hear it. Let's get started with the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, they had a disappointing performance on Thursday night against the Los Angeles Kings. You know, was that performance just, in your mind, you know, a good team playing against, or an average team playing against an upper echelon team, or was that a sign that, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and their tremendous, you know, hot streak that they've been on since the hiring of Paul Maurice is coming to an end?
Well, we know the LA Kings are a very good team, and they're in sixth place, and they've been having trouble scoring goals this year. But this has been a good team for a long time now, even before they won the Stanley Cup a few years back now. But the Jets have a depleted roster, and there were players that were playing in positions that they're not used to. Michael Frolik playing center. Mm-hmm. I thought he did an okay job, but that's not his natural position. We know that. The Kings were dominant in that game, and the Jets kept it early. The first period, they were keeping it close, and after they got the first goal and the Kings came right back, it really, the tides really turned there. And the Kings, sure, they might have had their issues now, but they're rolling six wins in a row now, and the Jets, you could definitely tell that the Jets were missing Mark Scheifele, and they didn't bring their A game. I think everybody saw that. Everybody that was at that game didn't see the best effort from the Winnipeg Jets, and they've been rolling along, and that they have to improve. The game against the Islanders, they left a point on the board there, but they can play better than that, absolutely.
You know, they didn't play well, Drew, and then they got outplayed. They didn't play well because LA played well, I thought. I'm sure they didn't maybe show up as much as they wanted to, but they didn't have any room. LA took away any room that they had with their size, with their positioning, not necessarily with their speed because they're not that fast, but they did a lot of, holding a guy back like they always do and making sure you're not getting any odd man rushes. And how many odd man rushes did the Jets get? So they played against a better team, a team that's far more talented. It doesn't spend much more money on the cap, but is that much more talented. And I thought that was on display on Thursday. The problem the Jets have, as he mentions, it's the center shortage. We talked about that. They're not going to flip a pick or somebody to get another NHL body here. It's going to be slim pickings. They didn't play their fourth line very much. I think that Jim Slater needs to see more ice time. I'm not saying Jim Slater's going to be the difference between this team making the playoffs and not, but I think he's going to contribute to helping the squad. And Halaschuk, I realize Halaschuk's a winger and Slater's a center, but Halaschuk shouldn't be playing twice as much as Jim Slater. And then at the same time, no matter if that happened or not, they were still going to lose to Los Angeles, because Los Angeles, the team that didn't even look... Gabrick was on the top line, and he looked out of sorts, playing with Williams and with Kopitar.
Not a huge surprise,
right,
given that it was his first game.
Right, exactly, because he was acquired and it took him a while, but the rest of the team was going real well. And that's a tough team to beat. As he mentions, they've won six in a row. But the Jets haven't been playing that well. That's the thing. You look at the Nashville game, they win that game, but do they deserve to win that game?
Most people would probably say not, that they were outplayed by Nashville.
I mean, there's a lot of games under this Maurice streak that they maybe didn't deserve to win. Chicago, Anaheim come to mind. Both of those games beating better teams. You still win, but did they outplay them? Were they even close, really? Not particularly. So sometimes, that's going to come around, and you're not going to win those games all the time. And that's what's happening now. And the problem is the Jets are giving up points. Now they're 3 points behind Dallas. Dallas has a game in hand, making the games against Dallas all that much more important down the stretch here.
Right.
But Phoenix is in the middle of them now. Luckily, Vancouver's tanking, and Nashville's basically packed it in, with the Leguan trade now, and Rene's back, a Leguan trade. They know that their goal is kind of for next season and beyond, if you listen to them talk. So you're still, I think it's still really a three-team race, but the Jets are honestly, I think that they're very possibly on the brink of being out of it too. And because, as you mentioned, Frolik playing center too, it's going to be tough to match up against these teams. They don't have an easy schedule. Dallas has an easy schedule.
Mm-hmm. We went through the schedule. Was that last week or a couple weeks ago at this point?
So how are you gonna make up? Like, who's gonna put up the points? And Scheifele is a loss, guys. Obviously, Scheifele is a loss. But I also felt like Ezzie Thursday's game was a team that knew the GM didn't go out. I'm not saying he ought to have gone out and done anything huge, but the GM didn't go out and do anything, basically saying, we don't think this team's great, and an LA team had just got Gabrick. I thought that was evident by watching the game, that you saw a team with confidence, obviously, for other reasons, but also they get another player, the GM thinks, hey, we got a good squad here. And the Jets, regardless of what you think on the big picture, because I don't think you should do anything, crazy, the guys in the room don't care. The guys in the room don't care. They want to make the playoffs.
They don't care that you're building for a great team 3 years down the road from now.
Right. So what the problem is then they don't care. They want to win now, and then they see Frolik as lining up at center. What do you want them to do?
Right. And at this point in the season, all the Jets can do is win. It's really, you mentioned the schedule, and with 18 games left, you're going to have to go 13-5, or you're going to have to go 14-4, something like that, to make the playoffs, right? It's not going to be even .600 hockey, really. And for this team, a lot of fans were leaving that game a little bit discouraged. And, the Kings are a team that, going into this game, I had major concerns. The Jets beat the Kings earlier in the season in a bit of a slugfest. It was a high-scoring game, if you remember that game earlier.
It was the first game of the year.
First game of the year. And the Kings are a tough team to beat for a lot of the good teams in the Western Conference. I think the LA Kings are still a serious contender. And I know they've had their goal-scoring issues, but up the middle, you've still got Mike Richards and Anže Kopitar and Jared Staal. This team is big, and the Jets have had trouble with these big Western Conference teams. You're talking the Ducks, you're talking the Kings, you're talking the Blues. These guys don't play a flashy game at all, and they can wear you down, and they don't give up a lot. The Kings are one of the best defensive teams, and I think that gets lost when you see all of the big names out there. This is a team that just doesn't give you a lot. Drew Doughty, Jake Muzzin, Voyanov, mm-hmm. these guys, this is a really good team. And, you know, the Jets are going to have to beat some of these teams. Richie mentioned the Stars. They're going to have to beat some of these teams that are ahead of them in the standings. It's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Have to win both Stars games.
Well, absolutely. Obviously, they play the Stars on a Sunday night coming up. Next Sunday. And then they go to Dallas to start that long West Coast road trip, that six-game road trip or five games, whatever it actually is. That's where they play the Stars the next two times, and the only two times in the still to go in the season. I want to go back to your point that you mentioned, Richard, about you think that it had a deflating effect on the dressing room to see your general manager do absolutely nothing at the trade deadline. You know, should Kevin Cheveldayoff, with that in mind, or with that, you know, should he have made a minor move just to sort of, you know, not obviously, I think we're in agreement, he shouldn't have done anything that would mortgage the long-term health of this team. But should he gone out and tried to make trade a late round draft pick, and just make a minor sort of addition into the room to keep the spirits inflated as opposed to a potential deflation that happens when he does nothing?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that, and you could argue that they just get an NHL body. I mean, the problem is when you have Tingratti and Peluso and all these guys in line up at the same time, it's giving you a disadvantage against the other team's fourth line. It's giving you a disadvantage, you know, throughout, really, because of the depth reasons, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, that has probably an issue, and you could have maybe flipped a later pick for somebody. The cost was not, I think people need to realize, the cost of the deadline was not high this year. The GMs have smartened up a bit.
Well, like you said, not one first-round draft pick was traded at the actual deadline.
Right. One went for Ryan Miller.
That's right.
You know, there's some, and then, obviously, the St. Louis trade. That was, you know, those are the two big ones that included a first-rounder.
Well, this isn't the year, like, as you said, on Wednesday, where Paul Gostad goes for a first-rounder.
That's exactly right. So that's what's happened. So, I mean, if these guys, if Vanek's going for second and a prospect, and there's conflicting reports, you hear Gar Snow talk, he thinks the prospect's really good, obviously. We had Pat Hickey on the show. The prospect, according to Montreal, hasn't developed as they'd like. Mm-hmm. So it's costing a second round pick and a prospect for Thomas Vanek. You know, what would a borderline player have cost? And then that's just, you know, what you have taken into consideration, but When the team lost Scheifele and didn't make a move, Cheveldayoff was saying that, you know, we don't think we're going to make it by not making any moves at all, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think that's wrong, because Dallas was in the driver's seat anyhow. But just if you want the team to really get through this next stretch and keep it close, then they need somebody. Like, they need some. And the one thing is, maybe I'll talk about this after the break. The one thing about depth. And, you know, look at Detroit. Detroit's injuries. Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Helm, and Weiss. Arguably, they're top four centers, depending on how you want to play Datsyuk and Zetterberg. But, you know, but by coming through the system, Joakim Andersson, right? And they have Riley Sheehan. And then they acquire Legwand. So Detroit has built that through the draft, and that's what you have to do. But there are some teams who rely on depth from free agent signing. And one of the problems I think the Jets have had is the lack of depth in the minors cannot be, you cannot get those kind of players without drafting and developing. So if there's a huge gap in time, you need to sign a couple NHL guys for the bottom of your roster for depth purposes. And I think the Jets have probably let that opportunity pass them by in the offseason, signing a couple more guys who can just play third and fourth line roles who aren't AHL players, with all due respect. And that gap, I think, not doing that has cost them, and they haven't had a lot of injuries this year, guys. Think about it that way. They have very few injuries. Some significant ones, but very few overall. And as compared to, you know, look at Detroit or, you know, Tampa losing Stamkos or a bunch of other teams. So because they've had that much injuries, you haven't even noticed it, but you've had a lot of guys playing all year that, you know, probably ought to have not been playing in the NHL level for more than four or five games. So I think if Cheveldayoff had to go back, he probably would have signed some more depth players in the offseason to allow for his team to be able to deal with injuries better than they, you know, better than they are now or have.
Let's go to break. We'll talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you until 11 a.m. this morning. Hustler and Lawless follow us, and then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour. 1 p.m. leading up to 2 p.m. puck drop between the Winnipeg Jets and the Ottawa Senators. Big game between the Jets and the Senators, obviously, today. The Senators are a team that are coming on. They're playing the West Coast trip. I believe this is the final game on their four-game West Coast trip, having gone started last Sunday in Vancouver in the Heritage Classic, a game that they were able to defeat the Vancouver Canucks in. And then they went through Alberta and had an absolutely woeful showing in Alberta, losing to both the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers, something that, well, isn't really easy to do, given how bad those two teams have been this year. What do you expect out of the Ottawa Senators today as they play the Winnipeg Jets at 2 p.m. at the MTS Center?
Well, everybody here knows that the Senators have had a disastrous season after how well they played last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about what the Winnipeg Jets did at the trade deadline, and they obviously didn't make any moves. The Ottawa Senators, on the other hand, re-signed Chris Phillips, who we know was a sought-after defenseman, especially the Boston Bruins. And I imagine a few other teams were kicking the tires on getting a guy like Chris Phillips on their team. And then they went out and they acquired Alishemsky. And they didn't give up a lot to get Alishemsky, but they clearly, Richie and Brian Murray said this, they were buyers. They were going after some players. And you look at the Senators right now, and 6 points behind the Detroit Red Wings for that last playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, and that's not going to be easy to make up here with 19 or so games left. So the Senators are a team to me that I thought were going to be better. And the problem with this team, and it's been the problem with this team all year, is this group of defensemen has trouble moving the puck out of the zone. Erik Karlsson, with the exception of obviously Erik Karlsson, one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. But this team has struggled big time this year. The goaltending hasn't been as good as it's been either. Craig Anderson has played the majority of the games, and I kind of took issue with that earlier in the season, Richie, on the NHL Midweek Show. I think Robin Lehner's a better goalie, and Craig Anderson has struggled at times, but Paul McClain has stuck by Craig Anderson, and he said, Craig Anderson's my number one goalie, and I think Craig Anderson really, at this point, you can make the strong argument that he isn't the goalie that he once was. Now, the Ottawa Senators, they can score, and Jason Spezza has been playing better as of late, and Milan Mihalik, but as a whole, this group, they don't scare you a lot. They're a team that they're not particularly physical, you know, with the exception of they have guys, Chris Neal and other players, but this is a team that really they can be a little bit one-dimensional. They really can. And Bobby Ryan, to me, has probably been one of the biggest disappointments. Sure, he's got 20 goals, but this team as a whole has been pretty hot and cold all year. They haven't really, they've kind of been on the periphery of the playoffs the whole year. They haven't really ever been solidified into a playoff spot. So, I mean, you're talking about the Jets matching up against the Senators, and really, this is a defense that you can take advantage of. You can score some goals on this team, absolutely.
You know, as you signed up quite well, I mean, you look at the goaltending, first off, both goalies on this team, Robin Lehner and Craig Anderson, have goals against averages over 3. And I realize goals against average can be flawed, but at the end of the day, if both of the goalies who played basically every game in the whole season have a goals against average over 3, how the hell do you win in the National Hockey League?
Not very easily.
It's very difficult. That's very hard. And that doesn't mean only the goalies. I mean, as he mentions, the defense, too. When you look at the defense, and it's a young defense. We talked about Chris Phillips leaves. I mean, look how young it is. Karlsson, Mathot, Phillips, and CeCe, who's a good-looking young player, CeCe, and then Greiba and Wierkoch. And what you have there, Drew, is and as you have some talent, for sure. But the team game, and maybe like you want more veteran, I think, on that back end, and I think they're missing that. But the team game has not been there, meaning the team defense, buying in, all that stuff has not been there. And you see Paul McClain challenge his group, challenge them week after week almost. We need to do this better. And he's trying different ways to motivate them, and they're not buying in for whatever reason. And it's odd because you look at the team, and there's a lot of talent here. Their center group is Spezza, and I think Zibanejad, and if he's playing his natural position, and Turris, and Zach Smith. I mean, there's some depth. You like the kind of fourth line of Greening, Neal, and Smith. That's a great fourth line, Ez. Love the way that fourth line looks. You have Spets up the middle. Obviously, Mihalik and Hemsky are probably their name carries more value right now than their play. But this is a team that should certainly be closer in the race than they are right now. And right now, they're 6 points out of it. That's a hard, you know, we said, if you're 6 points out of it, you basically sell at the deadline. So obviously they're still going for it here, but they have to pass Jersey, Washington, Columbus just to get to Detroit.
And that's almost as big of a problem as the 6 point gap is that there's so many teams in between.
That's
you.
Right.
So it's you have to start. I mean, it takes forever to leapfrog one team, never mind three or four teams in this NHL.
They just can't play a consistent style of defense. And if they don't score enough to not play that, like, you don't. That's the problem. And James Gordon wrote about it. We're going to have him on later. He said, you know, the problem is if they want to score, it's at the expense of their defense. And you can't have it that way. It's like Team Canada in the Olympics. You got to score by playing defense. And obviously they had trouble scoring. But the point is you can't score at the expense of your defense.
Look at the Ottawa Senators. And we mentioned Jason Spezza. And this, he's had a tough year. You really, this really kind of shows you, we kind of hammer this home on this show, that hockey really is a team game. Because when the team's playing well, everybody's having a career year.
Right.
Remember, Paul McClain, yeah. Coach of the Year. Yeah. Everybody's playing well. Patrick Wierkoch, these guys, Andre Benoit. Remember all of these players on the Senators last year? They really surprised a lot of people. And then Erik Karlsson went down. And Spezza was injured last year. And they kept playing well. Why? As Richie's right. They were buying into this system. They were playing way better defensively. The Senators have allowed the second most goals in the Eastern Conference. It's really incredible for a yeah. team that last year... And again, Robin Lehner, I think, is a good goalie. And Craig Anderson's been a goalie going back to Washington and Colorado. He's a good goalie. But right now, it seems that...
Florida and Colorado, you mean?
Florida, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember him in Washington.
Well, the reality is that right now, when you don't have that goaltending, and you look at the drop-off, and I've talked about Clark MacArthur, I really like him. He, after Clark MacArthur, Bobby Ryan, you have a drop-off from 44 points, and then the next is Milan Mihalik.
That's right.
You have a 15-point drop-off from your top five scorers to the next players. And Mika Zibanejad, he's still young, 20 years old. But, I mean, Milan Mihalik, that's your top-line right winger, and he's got 10 goals.
Well, and that's a great point, Ezzy. Another point is, you know, again, we talk about goals against average. You know, these stats are a little bit flawed. Plus, minus, obviously, we know about the flaws, about who you're playing against and situations and all that, and how, you know, how much you're playing, all that stuff. Jason Spezza's minus 24, and Mihalik's minus 23.
It's unbelievable.
I don't care how insignificant some may deem plus minus. If your top line best players are minus 25, there's no way you're going to be in the playoffs. There's no way. Because if you're playing against the other team's best players,
for comparison,
you know, on a personal level, obviously you may not be responsible for all that, but you cannot win if your best players are that or have that bad of a plus minus.
For comparison's sake, if you want to say, you know, Blake Wheeler's the Jets' top line right winger, he's a plus one. You know, Andrew Ladd is a plus seven. I mean, again, I don't put a lot of stock into plus minus either, but it does give you a little bit, like your point there.
If you're minus 25, Drew, and you're top line player on the team.
Well, sure.
Kyle Turris had a great year. Had a great year. That line, the most part, has been Turris with Ryan and MacArthur.
Yep.
It's been really good. But Spezza is still your best player. Spezza sees the ice better than anybody else in this team.
And he's probably the best playmaker on this team.
Well, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, does that, to you...
Well, Karlsson maybe, the only one.
Yeah, Karlsson maybe, but best forward, certainly.
Yeah.
To you, does that indicate that there might be a leadership problem in that dressing room?
Well, I mean, that's the other thing that falls on Jason Spezza. And I've actually been a Jason Spezza... backer.
You're a supporter of his.
I've always been. Yeah, I felt like he's always been unfairly criticized and easy to kind of poke at. And I still really like Jason Spezza. The leadership issue, I mean, some think that Chris Phillips should have been the captain, and part of that was maybe as he due to the fact that he was on a one-year deal and they weren't sure if he was going to resign. Maybe if they knew he'd be there for 3 years, they would have given him the captaincy based on time spent in Ottawa, and he's been a loyal foot soldier for them for many years. Spezza might have a little bit of a difficult time adjusting to the leadership and the, you know, the fact that they face adversity. Maybe they face adversity because of it. Maybe the adversity they're facing. Maybe the leadership, he stepped into a situation where there's going to be adversity in any of it. I don't know. But I do know that it's been his first season at the helm of as a captain, and I don't think you can simply write him off as a leader. I don't think that's fair. And part of that also falls on the shoulders of Paul McClain. And this is how coaching works, right? We gave him all the credit last year. Some of the fault needs to lie, you know, on his shoulders as well, because buying into a team concept, certainly it goes through the captain and everybody else, but you need the team to be buying into the defensive concept. And right now, they're not doing that. So that you know, you have to share some of that responsibility. It's a difficult situation, guys, because they got a lot of young talent. And I know you hear Brian Murray say, you know, we don't want draft picks at the deadline. You hear Brian Murray say, we like what we got in our system, but they're just not performing right now. That's got to be the most frustrating part for a general manager when he likes the talent, at least to be a top eight team in the East. Like, why are they below? You know, when you look at the Jets, you look at all these teams ahead of them. Okay, you know, maybe the top seven teams in the West for sure better than the Jets.
Yeah.
Question, what about the other couple teams? In the East, you know, if they look at the standings right now as Ottawa can't say Toronto or Philly or the Rangers, Tampa, even Detroit are that much better. Montreal are that much better than them. Aside from Pittsburgh and Boston, Ottawa should say, oh, we should be in there. And they're not. And they're not only that, they're behind Columbus, Washington, and Jersey. So it's got to be a frustrating year there.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this game. We'll break it down. We'll look at some of the key components to how the Jets end up winning this game if they do. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Talking about this afternoon's Winnipeg Jets Ottawa Senators game, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290 and, of course, online at TSN1290.ca. A key game for both teams as they chase the elusive wild card spots. The Jets come into today's game 3 points behind the Dallas Stars for the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. The Ottawa Senators a little bit further back, 6 points behind the Detroit Red Wings for the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Of course, the difference is the Senators, as we mentioned, have three teams between them and the Red Wings, whereas the Jets only have the Phoenix Coyotes between them and the Minnesota Wild. Dallas Stars.
It's a playoff game today.
Yeah.
Both teams need this game 100%, and this will be a great atmosphere in the MTS Center. You know, Hockey Night in Canada, you get two Canadian squads, both desperately need the victory. It should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a playoff game like you mentioned. If the Jets don't come out, you know, guns a-blazing tonight, and if they happen to fall, you know, to the hands of the Ottawa Senators, you can begin. I mean, I know they're certainly within striking distance, but there are troubling signs, whether it's the lack of performance since the Sochi Olympics ended, where they've played, you know, they've got better results than their performance on the ice would necessarily say. You know, obviously getting outplayed in Nashville and coming out with a victory and then only getting the 1 point against the Islanders and then losing on Thursday. You know, and that coupled with the injuries, I mean, this team is, obviously they were more confident since Paul Maurice has taken over and their performance has improved.
Yeah.
But I think they're also very fragile still. I don't think that they're one of the teams that, you know, a little adversity comes their way and they can just, you know, shove it off and get back rolling. You know, a team like the Los Angeles Kings or like any of these upper echelon teams that might lose two games in a row or three games in a row, but ultimately they know that, you know, we have the talent, we have the horses to be a dominating team. We'll get this ship righted. Like the Kings, you know, we've said what they want, 6 games in a row after sort of meandering through the first, you know, 55, 60 games of this year. They can turn it on. The Jets, confidence definitely in my mind a little bit fragile. So if you lose, if they lose clean to the Ottawa Senators today, as in they don't get a point, I believe this would be the first back-to-back losses under Paul Maurice. without or at least earning 1 point. You know, the Isles, they obviously lost, but they earned a point. So you can see that the Jets are a little bit emotionally fragile.
The Jets have played a lot better defensively under Paul Maurice, and there's any question about that.
Yeah.
But I do agree, Drew, in terms of fragility. I do think that they are similar. If you watch last game, you saw a lot of signs of things that you saw under Noel in terms of the way they played and the way they didn't really seem to have enough pushback and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I do agree with that. But defensively, they just don't... Generally, they have not given up as many great scoring opportunities.
No, their defense has improved drastically, obviously. Yeah,
team defense.
Yeah, team defense. So, keys to the game for you, Ezzy. You know, you look at these two teams, and you broke down the Senators and what they have last segment. In your mind, you know, what's an area the Jets can say, okay, this is one advantage we have on this team, this is what we can do to exploit them, be it speed on the wings or taking advantage of a team that might not be as great defensively. We outlined that the Senators are third last in the entire NHL in goals given up. So, you know, where do you see that? You know, what advantage do you see the Jets having here?
Well, the Ottawa Senators are a team where you can open it up a little bit more. And against the LA Kings, we mentioned that earlier, that you didn't see very many odd man rushes, and it's a team that just plays so structured, so well defensively. This is a team that you can open it up a little bit more. And, you know, Erik Karlsson takes risks. Some of these guys are young. Cody Ceci, this is his first year. Yeah. I mean, this is a team where you can open it up a little more. You can see guys like Kane and Wheeler using their speed wide. And I think, you know, look at the Ottawa Senators. This isn't a team that really is excellent in any area. They're not very good in special teams. They're kind of middle of the pack in special teams. And so it's a team that right now, and you talk about fragile, you look at the Ottawa Senators. For me, this is a team that needs this game more than the Jets do. Not to say that the Jets don't need this game to stay in the Western Conference playoff race, but you look at the Ottawa Senators, you mentioned 6 points out of a playoff spot right now, or 5 points, sorry. You lose this game, and you're essentially out of the playoff race. And in the Eastern Conference, it looked a little bit...
6 points.
6 points. Yeah. You look at it, and you know, you go 8 points out of a playoff spot with 17 games to play.
You're done.
It's just too hard to make those up. Then you're going to have to win 6 or 7 games in a row just to get that eighth and final playoff spot. So you look at the Senators, and it's a team that they're a puck possession team in the sense that they love... They score off the rush, but they're not a type of team, very different. And this is when you hear all about the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference. Yeah. The Jets seem to really play this type of team a lot better, and they have had success against the West. You know, they've turned it up, but this is a team where it's not going to be a team that's just going to grind you down. And the thing with the team like the LA Kings, the Jets don't have that type of makeup. They don't have that type of team that really can match up well against the Kings and the Blues. And these are some of the best teams, the Hawks. These are some of the best teams in the West. So they got to shoot more. Like, honestly, like, I know it's a cliche. They had 18 shots on net against the Kings. The Kings had 22 shots in one period. So, I mean, the Jets, they've got to start putting more pucks on the net, really. And I know we make fun of all of this, but they've got to start generating more offense. They've got to get dirty, get in front of the net, cause some havoc.
As long as you don't say net front presence, we'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, no, they got to start digging, like rolling up their sleeves and going to work here. And it starts today.
And you know, I think the key to the game, you know, we go usually it depends on the speed and the size and different things. There's some similarities between these squads today. I think the key to the game from a Jets perspective is quite simple. You're going to line up Wheeler, Ladd, and Little again. They're back together. They're going to go up likely against Karlsson and Mathot all night. And they got to win that battle. It's a simple one to me. This team is not deep anymore. You can't count on Jokinen, and I know Jokinen came in that goal last game. You can't count on them to produce. Kane has, I don't think, has been playing very well lately.
Hasn't scored, I believe, in 7 games.
Yeah, just
is
not, but not been playing well either. Like, you know, sometimes you'll score a couple, or you won't score, but you're playing. He's not playing well. Jokinen, you know, is playing all right for himself. But you look at the lines. You got Seriucci, Buff, and Frolik, and then the fourth line, the top line. And by the way, in the Islanders game, I thought Wheeler and Ladd were the only real guys who showed up and put big play the whole game.
In the Islanders game on Tuesday, I agree with you there.
Yeah, and so it's at the end of the day, you rely on your leaders. And the Jets' best player, it's an old cliche, this is 100% true in this case, because especially the lack of depth the Jets have right now. So, for example, if Jason Spezza doesn't outperform, you know, Enstrom and Bogosian, whatever it is, I mean, the tourist line can do something. I don't know if you can count on the Jets the same way as you can Ottawa. So Wheeler, Ladd, and Little need to be better, need to beat the Ottawa top line, you need to be able to take advantage of Carlson, and it's hard to. You have to beat Carlson and Mathot. It's simple. That's the way I think they're going to win today. Because I agree with Ezzy, it's going to be some goals out there. And you get into a shootout, and your top line's not going, you're not going to win. You will not win against this team, because the Jets don't have enough depth right now.
Jets haven't had a lot of success against the Ottawa Senators. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I know that past performance doesn't dictate.
Yeah, I mean, the style of play that Ottawa plays, though. One thing you got to watch out for with Ottawa is a quick up. And by that, I mean defense to offense. And you have to make sure in transition you deal with that. So that means not cheating, and that means staying in position and not throwing too many men in deep, because they can turn around, make a quick pass, and strike offensively. So you got to watch for that, because this team can move the puck. They're not defensively that strong, but they can move the puck. I mean, if you look at the guys in the backhand, Weirkoch can move the puck. Carlson can move the puck better than probably anybody. Probably him and Doughty. Keith are the three best, maybe, moving the puck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got some guys on the back end in Ottawa. CC can move the puck. So you got to watch for that.
You know, we talked about shots and all that, and the shots were really one-sided after really the first maybe 7-10 minutes of that game in LA's favor, talking about the Thursday night game, but also the zone time. And really, the Jets, you're not going to be very successful, not only in the NHL, any level of hockey, when the puck is in your zone. And there were times when the puck was in the Jets zone just for too long. And a guy like Erik Karlsson, he's the type of guy, he can have the game on his stick. And he really can. Yep. He has that ability. And he's almost someone that you want. And I thought that because the Jets were looking for that goal, that's why they couldn't roll their fourth line. And really, if you have a healthy team and more depth, then you're going to see the fourth line play more. And for the LA Kings, you look at their time, the fourth line played, they were playing more because they could, and they were up, and they knew they could shut it down. And I thought that you know, in a game like this, it's always and again, you see this, the stats in the playoffs, it's remarkable, the team that scores first, how successful they are. I feel like against the Ottawa Senators, scoring first doesn't mean as much. Against the LA Kings, and that's why the
Jets scored first and still lost.
Because LA scored right after, right?
Yeah.
But you know, the Jets, they couldn't play the same way from behind. I thought they just weren't getting any offense.
That's fair.
They just and again, you know, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, these guys, if you look, they've been a point per game over the last 10 games. You know, Richie mentioned Andrew Ladd had a couple goals against the Islanders. Somebody else has to score here. It's got to be somebody else. And Evander Kane had 7 shots on net, but not a lot of them were high quality against the LA Kings. A lot of them were from the outside. And I agree with Richie. I think, and Kane, you know, has had a rough year with injuries. And that hand injury, that hand infection, it's a tough injury. But he hasn't looked like the same player.
No,
he because
hasn't.
We know Evander Kane has the ability in the National Hockey League to be a dominant player. He can be a dominant player. When he's going, he is a player that scares opposing teams. And he hasn't been that scary player.
And he's not engaged. He continues to engage the refs far too much. He's got to stop with that. It's enough. He gets totally lost in the game.
You get off track when you're doing that, too. When you're too preoccupied with not getting calls against you or what's going on. He was battling with, it was Robin Regier a lot. They need him. He's a key guy for the Jets.
That's right. And you don't think these teams come in and know if you kind of get under his skin, boom, you get him off. They know that for sure. You watch the teams get under his skin right away. How many guys does he have a battle with in other teams? Luke Shen, Travis Hamonic, you saw Doughty a bit and with Regier. I mean, this is the book, guys. It's not hard. I mean, get him off. There's your secondary scoring. Boom, out the window.
Well, and you have to think that some of these guys are looking at Kane. They're saying he's not fighting. After that hand injury, I don't think he's fighting.
No, I don't think that's a problem. I think he'll still drop the gloves. He dropped them in the Phoenix game against, I think it was Derek Morris. So, I mean, he said, you know, and he said that in his quote. He said, you know, I'm not going to change the way I play because of my hand injury. But to your point, you know, if you can needle him and if you can get under his skin and if you can irritate him, he does seem to lose his mind a little bit and he loses his focus on what it should be, which is, you know, performing goal scoring or setting up goals as opposed to, you know, spending 5 minutes in the box for a relatively meaningless fight. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the New Jersey Devils, how all of a sudden they didn't circumvent the salary cap with the Ilya Kovalchuk contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
TSN
10 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Richard, Ezra, producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
You know, Drew, I know you want to talk about the Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, contract situation. You know, Remus isn't here right now.
Yes.
And I got a little funny story that I told you I was going to bring up on air just because hopefully he's listening. And
Remus is late? Weird.
So Remus, Huss, and I go to wrestling yesterday.
Yes, we've outlined that.
And Remus leaves the seats to get a beer or to get food or whatever, and he comes back. What does he have? One of those little plastic championship belts. So Huss and I look at Remus, and he's wearing it like around, like, you know, you would wear it if you were like the champion or whatever.
Unbelievable.
And we just start making fun of him. You know, Remus, 26 years old, wearing a plastic belt.
27 years old.
27 years old. And we ask Remus, like, why did you buy that? He's like, I was going to buy a t-shirt, and, you know, you know how Remus is, and I didn't like any of the t-shirts, so this is the funny part of the story.
I actually would have preferred if you had done an impression of Remus's voice there. That would have
right.
been pretty funny.
I don't do a good Remus. Richie does a better Remus impression, but the funny part of the story, okay, is that we're talking to Remus about the belt.
And I thought the 27-year-old buying a plastic belt was the funny part of the story already.
The funniest part is after there's an intermission, right? So we go to the concourse after, and the funniest thing is they sell bigger belts that are more realistic looking for $150. Like, this belt was $30. So Remus goes, oh, this belt was only $30. No big deal. But then you look at these little kids, like these 4- and 5-year-old kids that have the bigger belts. So Remus, 27 years old, full grown man, walking around like, you know, he was having a good time, having a few wobbly pops, walking around with this little plastic belt, and you see this little 4-year-old kid walking with his dad with this actual leather belt that his dad spent $150 on. And Remus was asking us, he's like, should I have gotten the bigger belt? I don't want to spend $150 on it. So funny. That was great.
There should have been a reality show following you guys around. You, Huss, and Remus at wrestling last night must have been quite a doozy.
Well, wrestling only comes around here, it seems like, every 3 or 4 years, but it's a lot of fun, and it wasn't televised, but there were some really good matches. And you look around, and wrestling is just as popular as it's ever been. It really is. It was packed.
Is it
in there?
Is it just as popular? I remember, like, back in the Richie early 2000s, Monday Night Raw was like the biggest thing ever.
I'll tell you,
it's the number one show on cable television every week.
I'll tell you how popular it is. Yeah. WWE is coming out with their own network, and for $10 a month, and I'm not selling the network right now, I'm just saying that this is how popular it is, they're going to start selling subscriptions, and you get the pay-per-views included in that. So I imagine the subscriptions for that are going to be through the roof. So it's still, I mean, I don't know the numbers and all that, but it's still just the amount of people there buying merchandise and showing up for that show. It's incredible.
Speaking of incredible, the NHL, sometimes, you know, every now and then the NHL, you know, they try and be this professional, you know, operation with rules and regulations, and we're going to impose penalties, and these are the final thing. And then every now and then, they just go a little bit clown show on you. And earlier this week, I would say that they went clown show.
I disagree.
Really?
But go ahead.
Obviously, what I'm referring to is the NHL reversing the discipline that they handed down to the New Jersey Devils back in the summer of 2010, I believe, is when it was initially punished.
Yep.
They fined the New Jersey Devils $3 million. They required them to forfeit a third overall draft pick in 2011. Pardon me, a third round draft pick in 2011. Yep. And then they were obligated within a 4-year period, 2011 through 2014, they were obligated to surrender their first-round draft choice. All of this is because the NHL deemed that the New Jersey Devils deliberately signed a cap-circumventing contract with then-New Jersey Devils forward Ilya Kovalchuk.
You mean the same contract every other team signed?
Yes. I can see where you're going with this already. Back in the summer of 2010, the Devils signed Ilya Kovalchuk to a 17-year, $102 million contract. It was so obvious that it was a cap circumvention. It was designed, the last 5 years of the contract were designed specifically to lower the salary cap hit on the other 12 years of the contract. The NHL, long story short, deemed it not, they wouldn't approve it. It went to arbitration, and they had to rework the contract. And anyways, long story short, the NHL, they eventually got a contract signed, and the NHL fined the New Jersey Devils the amount that I just mentioned. Earlier this week, the NHL announced that
4 years after the fact, we're not going to punish you. We're not going to revoke that first round draft pick, which would have had to have been this year.
Right.
We're not going to revoke the first round draft pick, and we're only going to fine you $1.5 million rather than $3 million.
Yeah, but they're going to put the draft pick's the last pick of the round.
Fine. The punishment is
significant.
Right. The punishment is that the draft pick will be the 30th draft pick of the first round, as opposed to wherever the Devils would probably be drafting, which is probably top 15.
10 to 20. But I guess probably. Yeah. I guess this is quickly but needs to be pointed out. The Devils were criticized by us as well. I know for me, for continuing to defer their pick. I didn't know they were actually formally appealing this or had any shot of reversing this, because do you guys remember when they kept when they made it to the finals against Los Angeles?
Yeah.
They didn't give up that first round pick. They had an option of giving up a first round pick in any of these 3 years, I believe it was.
Why did they have the option, first of all?
Well, I mean, I don't know. So what happened was, everybody's like, well, why didn't they give it up in the year against the Kings?
Mm-hmm. It's a better draft.
Yeah, and then last year would have been
the 29th overall pick.
Yeah, exactly. And then last year, they didn't want to give it up because obviously, I mean, they used it for Schneider, but it was in New Jersey, the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You're not going to give it up at the draft. Yeah. It's in your city.
Nobody
would care. And then this year, so we thought, oh, they're going to give up a top probably 15 pick as opposed to give up the 29th pick. Why didn't they do that? Now we realize they didn't give up any picks. And Lamoriello was successful, so give him credit.
I wonder how much of
this...
Say that one thing about this. I wonder how much this has to do with Bettman feeling bad for the Devils that Kovalchuk went to the KHL.
Yeah. Well, the Devils got out from under that contract. I mean, how much do you think that the new ownership of the New Jersey Devils, they were sold in this offseason, how much do you... You know, I wouldn't... obviously, they're never going to come out and admit it, but I would not be shocked if there was a quid pro quo here with the new ownership saying, you know, I'll buy the team... But you're going to have to, you know, lessen the fine, the $3 million fine, and we're going to have to figure out something about the draft pick as opposed to forfeiting the top 15 draft pick.
That's an interesting theory, Drew. I didn't think of it that way. I thought more it was Lamoriello and his relationship, you know, we thought pretty strong with the NHL before all this happened. And I think it's rooted in fairness, frankly. The Detroit Red Wings signed like 5 of these deals. Everybody signed these deals. And what happened also, another factor, Drew, is the new CBA.
Right.
It's gone to now penalize those contracts.
So there's retroactively.
Which is very rare.
Right. Well, you're right, because we talked about it on Wednesday with Roberto Luongo, the cap circumvention clauses that exist from previously signed contracts.
Right, and not only are those...
has gone off on those. Because he was so mad about the fact that he signed that deal, and then he had to grow a goatee to deal with it.
Wait till 10 years from now when Roberto Luongo retires with a year left on his contract, and the Vancouver Canucks get an $8 million salary cap hit. Then ask them how mad they are.
Roberto Luongo, just as an aside, back in a Florida Panthers jersey, just looks great, and he got a shutout in his first game. But back to the cap circumvention and all that. Richie's right. There were so many of these deals pre last CBA, and the fact that the New Jersey Devils were penalized just for being kind of the way that this went down, and that contract 4 years ago was absolutely ridiculous. 17 years, $102 million, and all that. Mm-hmm. It was more so, I think, the NHL telling the New Jersey Devils, you guys aren't going to do this. You're kind of making a mockery of this, and we're going to penalize you. And as it turns out, they reduced the fine and gave them a draft pick. I know that a lot of teams aren't happy about this, but you can't say that it's not fair, as Richie mentioned. You can't say that it's not fair when all the other teams were doing it during the last CBA.
Now, Luongo has 8 years left on his deal, Drew, so if he retires in 10 years, everybody's good.
Whatever it is. You know what my point is. The thing about the contract, yes, I think initially they should never have levied this fine because, like you said, everybody was doing it. But I think it makes the NHL look so bush league.
I don't agree with that.
When 3 years after the fact, they determine... Yeah. That they determine, we were a little heavy-handed 3 years ago, so we'll let it go now.
Things have changed, though. The cap, I mean, the CBA has changed. It's not like it's the exact same situation. The landscape is certainly different than it was 3 years ago.
Fine, but then don't punish them at all if you're worried about how the land...
Well, that's a different conversation, though, isn't it?
Well, or make the punishment, okay, well, you know, the CBA is up 3 years from now. You have to... The punishment is in the next 2 years or something. Don't use the CBA... I don't believe that the CBA is the reason that they're now getting away with this, for lack of a better term. I do truly believe that...
Hey, it's still a penalty, though. I mean, having your pick from 14 to 30 is significant. Nobody's... You know, what are you doing to sweeten that pot? You're trading a second and a third? Like, you're not... It's a significant penalty still. It's still too much of a penalty, frankly. I don't like any of those contracts. I hated them. I thought they were all ridiculous. But if you're not going to punish the first 5, 10, Don't punish him.
And I look at it that this is going to set a good precedent, because really you can't penalize a team like that. Or, Richie, you basically mentioned penalize them at all, really. But that whole contract, is there anything? You mentioned Bush League. I mean, the New Jersey Devils, you guys know how big of a fan I am of the New Jersey Devils. Ilya Kovalchuk was the worst thing to ever happen to the Devils. Yeah. They really haven't recovered. And they had Jaromir Jagr has done a great job, and they had to really go to a plan B without Kovalchuk. But, you know, that contract... That's a gong show.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo from the Philadelphia Flyers website is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including the Winnipeg Jets morning papers, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our number one guest all time, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, well, you know, you guys have, I guess you have Gordon on for information. You have Russo on for wisdom. You bring me on for, like, entertainment?
Comic relief, really. Comic relief.
Well, Anthony, the reality is you're now a part of the family. I've been asking Drew every week since you've left, when are we having Anthony back on? If you're not on for 2 months, you know, there's something wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I felt like you know, an outcast for a while there. Like, geez, what did I do? You know, now I'm like the prodigal son returning.
Well, actually, we didn't bring you on to talk about the Flyers. We just brought you on to talk about where we're going to eat in Philly at the draft coming up in a couple months.
We're going to have a barbecue in my house. You guys are going to be holed up in my basement, and we're going to be barbecuing for 3 days. That's what we're going to be doing.
You know that means you're letting Ezra onto your property.
Yeah, but you know what? He can stay in the room with the dog. That way, that, you know, they're limited to the amount of space in the house that they're allowed access to.
Sounds like you got this well thought out ahead of time. So that's always good.
In my mind, I'm already there.
Anthony,
how are you guys doing?
Flyers were, they made a couple moves at the trade deadline. The big one was adding Andrew McDonald from the New York Islanders to shore up the back end of the Flyers' defense. You know, why did they like McDonald so much? Well, you know, what was the interest that the Flyers had in McDonald?
Well, I mean, I think that the Flyers are taking an anti-advanced statistic approach. And it's funny that I say that because, you know, a lot of the negative toward acquiring Andrew McDonald came from the math geeks who say, well, his advanced stats are not very good with the Islanders. But the fact of the matter is, to start off with that, it's that, you know, A, it's the Islanders, you know, and he's playing number one D minutes with a bad team, and he's not a number one defenseman. So you bring him to Philadelphia, you put him on the third pair, plays against less, you know, lesser competition, he's going to be a better guy. But he blocks shots. And so if the Flyers aren't going to be a great puck possession team, they're going to be a team that's going to say, well, if the other team's got the puck, we're going to prevent them from scoring. So they now have two of the top four shot blockers in the NHL in McDonald and Nick Grossman. And McDonald also adds a little bit. He's more of a two-way guy. He's kind of like a Coburn in that sense, in that he can skate a little bit. He can make a nice first pass. He can provide a little bit of offense. So, I mean, they felt like that was something that could help. Is it the be-all, end-all for the defense? No. They still need a number one defenseman, and that's going to probably be their goal in the summer in some capacity. But for now, they needed to upgrade for the playoffs because they firmly believe they're a playoff team, and the more they win, the more everyone else is starting to think they're a playoff team too. So I think that they looked at it as, hey, whatever we could do to try and win in the playoffs now is kind of house money if we get there, and then we'll worry about next year.
Anthony, the other move that the Philadelphia Flyers made before the trade deadline was moving Andre Mezros to the Boston Bruins for a third-round pick. Were you surprised that they were able to get that third-round pick back for Mezros?
Well, you know, it was actually a really good move by Paul Holmgren, and then it turned out that the Flyers actually ate half of that salary that was left for him for the He makes plays at 4.1 against the cap. I think he was still owed like 1.2 million, so the Flyers are eating about 600,000. But the deal is now, and this is how they were able to get the Bruins to pay a little bit more for him. If the Bruins make the conference finals and Mazaros plays in two-thirds of the playoff games, that pick becomes a two next year. So that's another key thing. So the Flyers, I mean, you know, you think, you look at the playoff situation in the East, Boston is probably one of the teams that should reach the conference finals. They're definitely the best team in that division. As long as he stays healthy and plays, there's no reason to think that the Flyers don't come out of this with a second-round pick in this coming draft, which they like. Of course, it's here in Philadelphia. So to have three picks in the first two rounds is actually a pretty exciting thing for them.
Yeah, that's a nice return for them, Anthony. And McDonald lined up, I believe, first game with Luke Shen. Do you see that combo continuing?
Yes, I do, actually. It's interesting because McDonald will, I mean, he's going to be a little bit more of a wild card, and there's going to be other situations where he's going to play with Mark Streit. Whenever it's 4-on-4, he's going to play with Streit. On the second power play unit, he's going to play with Streit. And if the team gets behind and they need to generate offense, he's going to play with Streit. But for the most part, 5-on-5, McDonald's going to play with Luke Shen. And it's a good pairing because it gives the Flyers an opportunity to say to Luke Shen, look, your sole responsibility when you're on the ice is to play in your own end to protect the defensive zone and let McDonald be the guy who gets the puck out of the zone. You don't have to worry about making the passes that create the turnovers, which is where he's been mistake prone. Just go and do the things well that you do well. Hit guys, clear the front, you know, just play defense. And not to say that just one game is going to be a tell-all, but that first game that they played together was maybe Luke Shen's best game of the season against Washington. He was really, really good. And you'd seen it coming a little bit. He had been playing better maybe over the last 8-9 games prior to that. But that was really, it might have been his best game as a Flyer, period. So you hope that kind of, you know, limited responsibility and narrowing the focus for Luke Shen really makes him a better player for this team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by PhiladelphiaFlyers.com beat writer Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, there's always been a lot of ties between Ryan Kesler and the Philadelphia Flyers. Obviously, a number of years ago, the Flyers signed Kesler as an RFA to an offer sheet that the Canucks eventually matched, going way back in time now. You know, were the Flyers in on trying to acquire Ryan Kesler at the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that question. There's been so many camps that have come out and said one way or the other. And Paul Holmgren officially said to most of the media that no, they were not in on Kesler. Yet there were several reports out there that they were. I'm here to tell you they were. They definitely inquired about him. They talked to Vancouver about him. But at the same time, it never got to a point where the Flyers were making a real hard offer. And I think that was because it came down pretty early in the conversation on trade deadline day that Vancouver ownership wasn't going to allow Kesler to be traded unless it was some ridiculous haul that the Canucks were going to get back in return. And so the Flyers at that point said, listen, we are interested. If your price comes down, talk to us. And if not, we're leaving a calling card for the summer. You know, maybe we'll talk at the draft. And which could be very interesting for us come draft day, if Ryan Kesler is in play, I would think that the Flyers and the Canucks will certainly be among the teams talking to one another to make that move, because the Flyers really love him.
Anthony, were the Flyers close to make any other moves prior to the trade deadline on Wednesday?
You know, I don't think so. They really didn't get involved in either Vanek or Molson, and I kind of thought that if they were looking for another player, they would need a left winger maybe to kind of help that second line. I mean, Vinny LeCavalier is playing there right now, and yeah, he's got goals in the last couple games, but really looks uncomfortable on the left side. He's really more of a center, and so I kind of thought that the Flyers might try to do something to try and just change that up a little bit, and maybe get a second line winger, and then maybe move Vinny down in the rotation a little bit. But they didn't really push hard for any big names. They might have been in on some of the other players that kind of got moved, like the secondary guys, like maybe like a Stempniak kind of guy or something along those lines. But they really didn't get real involved. I kind of know that there was a mild interest in Cavallari, but it just looked like Calgary was, you know, not going to move him. I don't think they really got too far into that. And they looked at it and said, you know what? This team is the fifth best record in hockey since November 8th. Let's just let them play. And you know, most people don't realize how long the Flyers have been playing this well. They're just noticing it now because they're coming up into second place in the standings. But it's really been for 4 months. And so Paul Holmgren's like, you know what, guys? We're going to give you a shot. You've earned it. Go out there and see how you do.
No, Anthony, the Flyers aren't the fastest team. I think that's one of probably their drawbacks when, you know, heading into the playoffs if they do make it. But you look at their back end as compared to the team that came through town here in Winnipeg earlier in the season, and it seems like it's far more adept at puck moving than the squad they had earlier. You know, you have Coburn, Timonen, McDonald, and Stripe. All four guys can move the puck pretty well, and then you have Shannon Grossman for more of your stay-at-home, slower guys who are physical. Is this team kind of, you know, able to kind of adapt to the way the game's being played a little more than the slower, plodding defense that they had at the end of last year and early this year?
Yeah, it's a great observation there, because what the Flyers have become now is they've become a team that's kind of a chameleon. They can play several different styles, and they can do them all, not necessarily be the best at each one, but they can certainly be competent at each one. And it's more evident, I think, than anything when you look at third periods. And, you know, that's when games, for the most part, in the NHL are won or lost, unless you get a big blowout at some point. But, you know, the Flyers, since that November 8th date, that magical date that we keep talking about, since that day, they're 17-0-4 when leading after two.
Wow.
And yet, since that date, they're also, they have 11 third period come from behind victories. So, you know, they can play ahead, they can play from behind, they can play in close games. And their special teams is pretty good. I mean, their penalty kills among the best in the league. Power plays, top half. You know, their second unit's probably a little weaker than their first unit, but they're getting a little bit better. But that's what I'm saying. They can hang in with any team playing any style, and they're not great at any one, but they're adequate enough at each of them that it makes them a tough team to play against in a close game.
Anthony, we haven't had you on in about two and a half months, I think, and we haven't had a chance to talk to you about the Steve Mason contract, which I believe was signed roughly 5 or 6 weeks ago. And I remember we were debating it before one of the Jets games. I really liked it, and Drew and Richie were kind of saying they didn't really understand it. But the Steve Mason contract, you signed for 3 years. What were your thoughts on the initial thoughts and now your thoughts on the contract?
You see, Ezra's just kissing up to me right now. Right? I actually think it's a fair deal. You know, Mason, his numbers this year are about what he is. He's a streaky goalie, and when he goes on a good streak, he's really good. And when he goes on a bit of a downturn, it's a bit of a downturn. I mean, he got pulled 3 times in 4 games last month, you know, and it just, that's the way he is as a goaltender. But, you know, if you're a 2.5 goalie and you're stopping, you know, 91.5 to 92% of the shots that you're seeing, you're going to give a team a chance to win on most nights. That's not making you an elite goalie, but it's also not making you a bad goalie. And the commitment they made to him was, you know, for 3 years, and the money wasn't outrageous. And, you know, the Flyers look at it and say, look, we have a young prospect goaltender that we drafted 2 years ago. Anthony Stolarz is playing for the London Knights right now. And they think that ultimately he's going to be their goalie of the future. And he's 20 years old right now. Give him a couple years. You know, he's going to play AHL hockey next year, maybe the year after that, and then maybe be an NHL backup for Mason. Then he'll be ready to go. And so that they really time this out properly and say, you know what, Steve, if you can get us, if you can win us something moving forward, great. And if you can't, you'll be, you know, serviceable enough to keep us in the conversation, and then we'll turn it over to our hotshot prospect at that point. And when you look around the league, you know, look at all the goalies that were traded on trade deadline day. It was ridiculous how many were traded. Mm-hmm. And the thought process is anymore, there's what, 3, 4, maybe 5 elite goalies in hockey in general, and then everyone else is kind of mediocre. And unless you have one of those elite goalies, you have mediocrity. And so therefore, you have to find a way to win with mediocrity, and that's what the Flyers are trying to do.
Final question, Anthony. You sometimes when you hear about trades with the Flyers, you hear about Couturier, you hear about Braden Schenn. Braden Schenn's the one who intrigues me more. You know, getting to his third real full season here in the National Hockey League. How is he progressing, and what do you see kind of for him in the future? Like, when you hear about him in talks, is this the guy that the Flyers think can be their second-line center for the next 10 years, or do they think he's maybe not as good as they once thought? What's the impression there around the team about him?
Yeah, it fluctuates with Braden. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, Couturier's name comes up just because every other team covets Couturier.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Couturier is nearly as untouchable as Giroux is with the Flyers. That's how much they love him. But Braden Schenn is a guy who's kind of, you know, changed some internally, has changed some thought processes about him. I mean, he's a guy who, at the beginning of the year, they would have moved him in a heartbeat if they could have. And actually has had a pretty good year. It took a while to get started, but once he got started in early December, he's been a pretty good player for them since then. And really, at the same time, he's their only real tradable guy because he's a restricted free agent. He doesn't have a long-term deal, doesn't have a big money thing that another team would have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows it. I mean, we've talked about it. He says, you know, I'm the guy that would have to go in any big deal. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I'm talking to you guys. We had heard that once again there was conversation with Winnipeg about Evander Kane. And I know Winnipeg says, oh, we don't want to move him. And the Flyers say, we didn't talk to him. Well, yeah, but you know what? When there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
These two teams keep talking and these names keep coming up. I think that it's probably something that the Flyers wish more than Winnipeg wishes. But I would think that Braden Schenn would have to be the centerpiece of a trade if that were to occur. Would have to be the centerpiece, and I don't think he would mind going to Winnipeg. It would be close to Saskatchewan,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't be far from his hometown, and it would be a place where I think he could flourish as a center. He's actually been much better, like I said, over the past couple of months than he was at all last year, or even the very beginning part of this season.
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the team website, philadelphiaflyers.com. You can follow him on Twitter, @InsideTheFlyers. Anthony, thanks very much, and we'll see you in a couple months, buddy.
Yeah, I'm getting the grill ready now. Beautiful day. I'm cleaning it off, and then I just got to get Ezra's cage ready.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, guys, take care.
Take care.
Thanks, Anthony.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Professional Accounting Designation opens doors of unlimited career opportunity and financial reward. For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers. Coming up in about 7 minutes' time, we'll head out to Dallas to talk to Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He's in Dallas as the Wild play the Stars later on tonight.
Tonight is Mike Modano retirement night.
Oh, is it?
A lot of jerseys being retired. Joe Nieuwendyk in Calgary.
Mm-hmm. Nick Lidstrom.
Nick Lidstrom in Detroit.
Yeah.
Mike Modano.
That's good that they did it on a night where this, the Wild are in town, because obviously the historical ties between Mike Modano and the two organizations. Unfortunately, they couldn't do a three-way and have the Red Wings in town as well, given the four games he played in Detroit or whatever it was. Did he play a full season in Detroit?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you wear, number 91 there?
I think it was 90.
90, yeah, because 91 was Fedorov, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if Fedorov was on the Wings then, but...
No, he wasn't, but it was just you wore number 90, yeah.
You can't wear 9. You know, just as an aside, I know you want to get moving here, Drew. Nicholas Lidstrom, I thought there was a really funny quote. I don't know if you guys saw that. When Nicholas Lidstrom first got to Detroit, I guess he didn't know about the history and all that. And they asked him, what number do you want? And he said 9. And they said, you're not getting that number.
I saw that.
That was a funny quote. Nobody's getting number 9.
Yeah.
That was good.
Reports out of Boston
after the trade deadline. I mean, usually what happens now that the fog of the trade deadline is lifted and teams sort of will talk about, not talk about, but the reporters will dig and find information relating to deals that almost happened but didn't quite happen. One of those reports came out of Boston earlier this week. Fluto Shinzawa of the Boston Globe reports that the Canucks had a deal in place with the Boston Bruins that would have seen Alex Edler shipped to the Bruins. Alex Edler, of course, being the Canucks' defense, the Bruins needing a defenseman after they lost Dennis Seidenberg for the year. So there was certainly a lot of good fit there. According to Fluto Shinzawa, the deal would have seen Alex Edler wind up in Boston in exchange for either Ryan Spooner or Alexander Kokhlekhev and Matt Bartkowski. That was the deal. It was going to be two players for Alex Edler. The reason the deal didn't happen is because the first trade, an initial trade needed to happen, and that was Ryan Kesler to Pittsburgh in exchange for reportedly Brandon Sutter and draft picks.
I think Simon Dupre was in there too.
It's possible that he would have been in there. Rumor, yeah. The reason I bring this up now is because Anthony mentioned that the Philadelphia Flyers ate a lot of money on the Andre Mazzaros deal, and then that deal could turn into a second round pick. The reason why the Bruins got the Flyers to eat money on that deal is so that they could have the cap space to acquire Alex Edler. So you can see how all the moves are intertwined mm-hmm. with one another. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, long story short, this doesn't end up happening because of the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, it seems like, first of all, the concept of Alex Edler on the Boston Bruins, was that a good fit for you in your mind?
Yeah, I can't see why that wouldn't have been a good fit, Drew. I mean, he's a guy who can move the puck, and he's a guy who's physical, and so those are two attributes that the Bruins would like to replace. He does have some similarities in his game to Dennis Seidenberg, left-handed shooting, kind of physical defensemen who can move the puck but are not the most dominant offensive guys, left-handed shooting guys. So there are some similarities there. Edler would have fit in nicely on Boston. I think even another interesting part is that Boston didn't think that Mezros was enough defensively, which I agree with, that they would have liked to add somebody of more significance, which Edler would have been. But again, I guess this goes back to Vancouver and the fact that it's disarray there, and unfortunately. And I don't know, Mike Gillis gets criticized, I think rightfully so, for many moves or many non-moves. But I think here the ownership is getting in the way, it appears, at least based on reports, the ownership is getting in the way of a Kesler deal, getting in the way of an Edler, maybe that thereby getting in the way of an Alex Edler deal. And then we're judging, you never really hear about these things, but when we're judging the general managers, we're assuming they have free reign to do as they wish. And in this case, it appears that's not what happened.
Well, that's what Rob Rossi, in Pittsburgh reported that. It wasn't even clear if Mike Gillis had the right to make changes.
But how does he get that information?
Well, it's obviously, who knows?
But let's try and figure that out. How does he get that information?
What, you're saying that it's, who's his source in that?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Who's throwing Vancouver ownership under the bus? Because if it's Mike Gillis, have fun not having a job.
Wow.
And if it's Pittsburgh, who told Pittsburgh? So that is not getting enough attention as far as I'm concerned right now. The fact that Vancouver ownership, it's been publicized that they got in the way,
yeah,
I think will come back to bite somebody. I'm just not sure who it'll be.
Most likely Gillis.
I look at the agents. I look at the agents, and I don't want to say that it's, I don't know.
But who tells the agents?
Well, who tells the agents? I think the agents know pretty well what's happening inside the team's organizations, I think.
I don't know. Drew, somebody's telling somebody ownership's not allowing for it, and I don't think that somebody wants to be that somebody later on.
Well, that's always the case. When you practice the dark arts, they can come back to bite you.
I only practice the light arts.
Yeah. That's what I figured. I was waiting. As soon as I said it,
there's a couple other jokes that could be made there, but we'll leave them.
We'll leave them? Yeah. Bring in Michael Russo instead?
Let's do
it. Come out of the darkness, Drew.
Okay. Into the light. Michael Russo, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.